WRFI-FM in Philadelphia, listener-supported public radio in the Delaware Valley. The Press Club broadcast that we just heard was tape-delayed from earlier this afternoon. Our next Press Club broadcast will be tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock, when the guest will be presidential hopeful John Glenn. So that's John Glenn tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock, tape-delayed from the National Press Club here on Fresh Air. The time right now is 4 o'clock, and this is Fresh Air on WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Coming up, we're going to hear part two of a series entitled On This Side of Paradise, A Look at American Religions. There's a religious revival in America, but many newly religious Americans are not returning to the churches and synagogues they grew up with. Instead, they're joining religious groups outside of the mainstream, or they're reinterpreting the teachings and traditions of the religions they were born into. It is this phenomenon that is the subject of the documentaries on religion that we are featuring Tuesdays at this time in October. Last week's program was about evangelical Protestantism. Today's edition is titled Wrestling with God, America's Young Jews. Next Tuesday at 4 o'clock, the subject will be In the Name of Allah, American Muslims. And the series concludes on Tuesday, October 25th, with Singing a New Song, The Catholic Left. After each program, we'll be joined by two of the people featured in the documentary, and we'll invite you to call, to phone in, and speak with them with your questions and comments. Today's studio guests will be Jeffrey Dacro, National Co-Director of the peace group New Jewish Agenda, and Phyllis Taylor, who in the program expresses her regret that many American Jews emphasize Jewish culture over spiritual teachings. Taylor now observes Quaker tradition, although she still considers herself a Jew. We'll invite your phone calls at the conclusion of this half-hour documentary. In the meantime, you might want to jot down the phone number, which is 923-2774. This Side of Paradise was produced at WHYY-FM for Temple University's Religion Department. Maeve McGoran is the producer, Ellen Cherry and Anthony Mateo project directors.
What holiday do you like to celebrate most?
Oh, Passover. It's very traditional and like everybody's together, you know.
I either like Yom HaMakabiyah, Yom Yushalayim, because in school I like to see the Israel. They sometimes put up an Israeli flag, and I like to see it fly in the air and that. And in third grade, we also did a play on Yom Yushalayim. Everybody thought it was terrific.
Do you think there's a lot of anti-Semitism in America?
Yes.
Have you ever experienced any?
Yes. When I'm walking down the street, a lot of kids say to me, "You dumb Jew." And I say, "Well, at least I'm proud of it."
Recently, I visited my family. My daughter, who's very, very pro-Israel, in fact, she's looking forward to 2 years from now when the older grandchild will be 13 and she'll be able to, want to take her to Israel for her bas mitzvah, sort of things that I don't go for. My son wasn't bar mitzvah. I don't think that we place the proper emphasis on religion. And whether they need that identification, I've never needed that identification. I knew what I was. Whether they need that identification, I don't know.
To be a Jew in America has always been a paradox. It has meant an uneasy tension between two goals: assimilation into American culture and preservation of a Jewish identity. There are 5.5 million Jews in the United States. About half of them have no affiliation with the organized Jewish community. Of those who do, most find their connection to Judaism through membership in synagogues or work with the community's philanthropic and defense organizations. But the congregations of mainstream synagogues are shrinking, and the population of Jews in America is declining. This has been blamed on three things: a decreasing Jewish birth rate, intermarriage with Gentiles, and the successful assimilation of Jews into American culture.
Do you think that maybe younger people do have trouble identifying themselves as Jews?
Yes, some of it out of fear, some of it out of shame. Some of it out of not knowing what they are, because their parents haven't given them right background training on what they should be. I don't know, maybe we've put the onus on them by having lived through two horrible wars, and they're confused. They question sometimes, where were the Jews during Hitler? And we were silent. My son has questioned me many times on that. He said, with all your talking, you didn't gather the people around to protest. Roosevelt didn't let them in when they came here, and they know that. They're products of that war.
Though many members of the post-war generation of American Jews have abandoned Judaism, a growing number find themselves passionately interested in the religion of their ancestors. A few are returning to Orthodox Jewish practices. Others are creating new movements within Judaism. One of these is the New Jewish Agenda, an organization of Jewish leftists. The national co-director, Jeffrey Dacrow, explains what brings Jews to the NJA.
Many of us in Agenda are people who come to the world, in our approach to the world, as Jews. Our social, political, economic agendas, our attitudes in the world, are determined by our background as Jews. For others of us, progressives, leftists, liberals, in the Jewish group of New Jewish Agenda, are people who have been stimulated to come to Agenda not because initially they felt driven as Jews to come to such an organization, but rather they found themselves being driven out of other organizations of progressives, because those organizations didn't understand or themselves were complicit in anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic kinds of behaviors or attitudes that didn't really reflect the authenticity of our identities.
The NJA's political goals include peace in the Middle East, nuclear disarmament, and reproductive freedom.
We are concerned with a whole variety of issues as progressives and as Jews. And as such, we are not interested in taking positions of self-interest, but rather of historical interest, by which I mean, what is the long-term agenda of the Jewish people? With the disarmament issue, we have sought clearly to align ourselves with the peace community because, as an obvious matter of fact, we understand the Jewish tradition, whether it be the religious Jewish tradition or the tradition of our culture and history, to be a tradition bound up with the seeking of peace. We're not interested in doing that as Quakers, not because Quakers don't have a good way of doing what they do, but because we're not Quakers. And we need to find what the Jewish way is.
Another new trend within Judaism is the Havurah movement, a loose organization of small groups which explore Jewish culture. Many New Jewish Agenda members also belong to Havurot. Members gather to study biblical and rabbinic texts and to celebrate Jewish holidays. Judy Mizell, a Lithuanian concentration camp survivor, belongs to a Philadelphia Havurah.
In Judaism, to me, is built in so many beautiful things. I sit down and at the meal, and I don't do it all the time, but that there is a bracha, that I don't sit down like an animal, that I know that even though I enjoy that steak, that a life had to be taken, that I don't just sit down and gorge myself. But I see all the murder and killing and destruction and nature being destroyed and everything else, that there is an awe for nature, that there is something that, and that to me is Judaism. And I really never think again about God, but I think about this. To me, I'll tell you, Judaism has never meant to me as a religion, because Judaism to me is not a religion, it's a civilization. Because if it would be for religion, how many Jews practice that religion? Judaism would have been dead a long time ago.
Many Jews agree that the cultural and political implications of Judaism or at least as important as the religious ones. Jeffrey Daycrow.
Jews can escape the problem of being seen only as religious by virtue of the fact that we also have a national aspiration and a national entity. The Jewish people are a people, distinct. We owe that partially to ourselves, and we frankly owe that partially to the oppression that we have undergone for centuries in Christian culture and Muslim culture.
But there are some Jews who believe the religious and theological aspects of Judaism have been neglected.
When I reflect back now on 12 years of religious training, I remember learning Hebrew, I remember learning history, I remember learning ritual, I remember learning culture. I really don't remember ever learning about God or ever having a feeling that God existed.
Phyllis Taylor is a nurse who works with the dying and has been active as a volunteer with Amnesty International. She became involved with the civil rights movement in the 1960s and eventually married a Christian civil rights activist.
He came out of Quaker background, and I attended Quaker meeting, and found it tremendously nurturing. Continued to go to Quaker meeting, but then really felt, I'm Jew. What am I doing in Quaker meeting? So I went back to the Jewish community, and I began studying with a rabbi again. And it was at that point that I realized that I was both Jewish, but also Quaker. That I was Jewish by background, but theologically had become a Quaker. That within Quakerism, I found a kind of integrity that I was not able to find in Judaism. That it was people speaking about God and translating that belief into their actions.
Have you become a Christian?
No. There's something that holds me to Judaism. It's that sense of history. It's that sense of covenant that was made so many thousands of years ago. There's also a sense of, you know, I question, would I be betraying the Jewish community if I became a Christian? Or would I be, in the most crass terms, would I just be helping to finish what Hitler started in terms of the demise of Judaism? And those things all hold me to being Jewish.
The threat of annihilation has always been felt by the Jewish community. It came closest to being realized during the Second World War. Judy Mizell was 10 when the war came to her small Lithuanian village.
And then I can remember a man coming to the house and saying that in Yiddish there was a fire burning, a fire burnt, and you have to leave this place because they're burning Jews from Poland. And people just didn't believe him.
Judy and her family were sent to a ghetto, were briefly interned at Auschwitz, and were eventually transported to Stutthof, another concentration camp in Poland.
The camp was surrounded by barbed wire, and there was a sentry on each end sitting like a little cubicle. And it was all controlled by electricity, and people simply used to commit suicide. It was the easiest way for them to die. And they, as soon as they went over, there were like three white lines. We went over the middle line, he would turn on the current, and they would be electrocuted. So we would stand there, and they would come and say, left, right. We never knew which line came back. And did that every day, every day.
What happened to your mother in all of this?
Well, my mother died in Stutthof in the gas chamber. They took her, and then she... I clung to her when she was selected, and when I got to the gas chamber, they told us to get undressed, and then the guard saw me and says, "You're too young to die. I'll count to 10. If you can run, I'll let you go." And I remember running and my mother screaming, "Judith, Leif, Leif, Judith, run, run." And that was the last I heard in my mother's voice.
B'malot k'doshim, Kidoshi Mutehorim Kizohar Harakiya.
Eventually, Judy and her sister escape from the Nazis while on a forced march outside the camp.
So we went from place to place, and until we found every place we went, there was finally a price on our head because we had typhus, and I had typhus now. And so the first one we were said was to go to a nunnery. And we went there, and the nuns were wonderful. But they said they couldn't keep us. They really were fantastic. They had in Stutthof, they had torn my hair out, so I had nothing but a mask.
They tore your hair out.
They tore my hair out. Instead of cutting it, they just tore it out. So my hair was nothing but sores, and they baited and they took care of it. They were wonderful, but they told us we had to convert, that they couldn't keep, they were endangering our life. I began to know more about catechism, and I knew about Judaism, and I was being indoctrinated. So we left the nunnery, which was really, my sister and I would talk about it, real foolish, that, you know, to do something like that.
At the end of the war, Judy and her sister were liberated by the Danes. Today she lives in the United States, where for many people, the Holocaust is only history or a far-off memory. The attitude that anti-Semitism is merely a rare aberration offends many Jews. Jeffrey Dacrow.
Anti-Semitism is a reality. Jews do experience anti-Semitism. Some Jews don't know that they experience anti-Semitism, and some Jews are conscious of the fact that they experience it. There are a whole variety of ways. At the simplest, most unappealing level, Jews still get called Christ killer on occasion. I've been called a Christ killer in my life. There is also the very simple fact that Jews are being killed now in this world today. People who refuse to acknowledge the reality and the existence of those activities that are reported, that are documented, those are people who choose not to hear those things, who choose not to acknowledge it, and for whatever reason don't want to know that that's happening. I, as a Jew, knowing what the history of my people has been, knowing how marginal any minority group is in any culture in which they are not the majority and have control, understand that one must be vigilant about those things.
Many Jewish parents are anxious that their children be aware of Jewish suffering and the threat of anti-Semitism. A group of children at a national Havurah conference described the games they were playing.
Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man, Donkey Kong.
Jewish Pac-Man. What's Jewish Pac-Man?
They're trying to combine Pac-Man with anti-Semitism.
Ghosts are the bad guys, and the Pac-Man is the Jews. And, like, when you get a parrot pill, it's like God's helping you.
And then you eat the enemies, and when you get back at the
it
enemies.
It gives you weapons to kill the enemies.
And we put yarmulke on it to look Jewish, and we put all kinds of pails and seats and all those stuff to look like a Jewish Pac-Man.
And who are the enemies?
The enemies are the monsters.
They're the anti-Semites.
And when you study Torah, you can defeat your enemies. It's like the power pill is the Torah, and when you study it, you can defeat your enemies.
Do you think there's a lot of anti-Semitism in America?
Yes.
Have you ever experienced any?
Last year when we were at the Chavra, my mom experienced something. She had a phone call while me and my dad and my sister were at the Chavra. And what happened was she got a call and said Hitler didn't go far enough.
In our school, there were like, with me and my sister are the only Jews in our school, and the kids call us names.
What kind of names do they call you?
Like, they call us Jews.
No, they think it's a bad word. They call it as a bad word. And, you know, when we saw two kids on a fight on the playground when we were walking home, and he said, "You're a real Jew, man." And they thought that they were cursing or something like that.
What did you do?
Well, I didn't do anything, but it makes me feel bad because when I walk out of school, people say, hey, Hebrew face, what you doing?
While we were walking the streets of New York, we saw a big Nazi sign of Hitler on the street. We didn't know what it was, and so we started spitting on it because we hated it so much. It was very big, about this big. It was on the street, the Nazi sign.
In my school, on Yom HaShoah, when the day when it was the Holocaust, we talked about that there was a possibility of another Holocaust in the United States.
I still think they're trying to put out Hitler's speech to get rid of all the Jews and everybody else who Hitler wanted to distinguish.
Were there other people that Hitler wanted to destroy?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyone that tried.
Homosexuals. I don't see why some Christians think they're so big and better than Jews, because Hitler was also an anti-Christian. He said that the Christians were inferior. He only believed in an Aryan race, blonde hair and blue eyes. And for one thing, that happens to be a very dumb idea, because for one thing, he had black hair.
These people, it's their problem. Maybe they're jealous of us.
Why could they be jealous?
Because maybe we don't have as many problems as they do.
Because Hashem loves us more than any other nation. And he gave us the Torah, not any other, and they're probably jealous.
I don't think they should be jealous that we have the Torah. They probably wouldn't obey it anyhow.
They had the chance to have it. The Jews were the last ones asked by Hashem if they wanted the Torah, but all the other nations
so
asked,
what is it like?
They asked, what's in it, before they said, we'll take it. Mm-hmm. And like Hashem said to them, it says you can't steal, and that nation stole, so they said they wouldn't take it. Yeah, but then he came to the Jews last, and they said, we'll take it, and then they asked what was in it.
I think that it's not exactly the Torah they want. I think they want that everybody should be like them, and they don't want any different people around them. Like, they didn't want the Jews because they said that they're short and that they're filthy.
Do you think that since God gave the Torah to the Jews and chose the Jews from all the people of the world, do you think that says something about the Jews and about other people?
They're good people. And like they care about each other and they're nice to each other. And sometimes it's like the Christians fight with people, but the Jews are nice to people.
And even though people blame us for everything we do, we'll still stay together and we'll still be alive no matter through whatever
happens. Joy Levitt is a rabbi of a small congregation in northern New Jersey. She's concerned about the effects of historical Jewish suffering on her people.
I see them as threatened, paranoid, and scared. That doesn't mean that there aren't things out to get them. I mean, I do recognize that there are threats to Jewish communities. But I think historically Jews used to, maybe I'm wrong, live as though there weren't. Otherwise, how do you live? But in some ways, I see my community, or see Jewish communities in the suburbs, maybe, as living because there are those kinds of threats. I think at their best moments, they perceive themselves to be the bearers of Jewish tradition, and they see that as an awesome responsibility. And especially outside a halachic or orthodox framework, they feel that they're losing the traditions of their ancestors by being expansive or being accepting, and they tend to tighten up. So I think there is a real fear of loss of Jewish tradition, and I also think there's a fear of grave anti-Semitism. Their behavior indicates a fear that is, I guess, typified by the expression, you really can't trust them. They might be nice now, but you really can't. And it's hard for me to talk to somebody who's a survivor and say, but it's not like that. Why should they believe me? My answer is because if you don't believe me, you're worse off. Because the paranoia and mistrust has led the community to be isolated, restrictive, and unable to grow. Interestingly enough, and I have to say this clearly, it's not so much pure Christians that the community finds difficult to deal with as much as Jews who are attracted to Christianity.
How do you think the Jewish community responds to your search for God that's taken you into churches?
Well, I had one person whom I respect say very clearly to me, I no longer consider you Jewish. And I guess I do feel that probably many people in the religious Jewish community no longer consider me Jewish. But I consider myself still Jewish. And that's important for me when I look in the mirror in the morning. I've got one foot in the Jewish camp and one foot in the Christian camp. And maybe I can be somewhat of a bridge. I think from the feedback I've gotten from some of my Christian friends is that they are far more sensitive to anti-Semitism, both overt or even covert anti-Semitism, because they know me now. And that's really fine, but it's lonely. You know, if you're a bridge person, you get tired because you've got people going over you, but there's nobody kind of sustaining you.
I want to tell you, when we left the nonary was a perfect example. It would have been a lot easier to stay and become a Catholic. But the fact is that I only wanted to survive as a Jew. When you ask me, what am I? I'm not going to say I'm an American Jew. I'm a Jew. And that, to me, is the most important. I have a very difficult to tell you to defining it, but to me, the most important thing is that my home is Jewish, that I observe kashrut, I observe the rituals, I observe the holidays. And while I'm doing it, it's constantly the same question which you ask me. Why am I doing it? And when, as long as I keep asking, I'm strengthening it myself.
One cannot escape one's Jewishness, ultimately. One shouldn't desire to escape one's Jewishness. One should want to affirm one's Jewishness as black power was something that blacks affirmed in the late 60s, middle 60s. We want to be able to say that it's a good thing, it is a beautiful thing, it is an important thing to be a Jew, that our culture and our history and our values and our religious life are all things that contribute to the wholesomeness of life in this world for all people, and that we want to be able to stand proudly and acknowledge that and identify with it and own it.
What would you like to say to the Jewish community?
I'd like to say to the Jewish community to search more for God. One of the things that I ache is that sometimes I think, because of fear of annihilation, which is a very real fear, I don't minimize that, it's a very real fear, we have so compromised our own basic ethics and our own basic prophets that maybe the Jews will survive, but I'm not sure Judaism will. And I guess I'd like to say back to the Jewish community, hang on to the prophets, because that's what's real. Not necessarily the culture and not our fear. It is that more fundamental thing of God. I'd also like the Jewish community to know that not all Christians are out to get them, either to annihilate them or to convert them. And that's been very insightful and uplifting to me as I've also traveled in the Christian world. And I'd want to say to the Christian community to be incredibly sensitive to what's going on within the Jewish community, to realize that there is nothing that Hitler did save the building of the crematoria that was not part of official church doctrine. And a lot of what's going on in the Middle East and a lot of what's going on in Judaism that Christians might not like is in fact, I think, partially Christians' fault because of their rampant anti-Semitism, either overt or covert.
The American Jewish community is not besieged by weapons and murderous instruments. But there is a feeling of danger a feeling of peril that persists because of all the things that have happened to us. And that's inescapable. And a defensive and cautious attitude is also inescapable in response to that. I think that it's really important to figure out how to balance that urge, that need to preserve oneself and one's community, with an urge and a need to be a human being responsible to other human beings outside of one's own community. And that's the tension. And it's not surprising that Jews, that blacks, that Palestinians all resist that positive urge and succumb very humanly to the negative, inhuman urges, which bring on only more murder and more death.
I have a strong belief in whatever it is, it's God, it's something. My difficulty was to get back into with human beings and trusting. It's not that I didn't trust God. I mean, I didn't think as much of should I trust him or not. I mean, it's, who am I to say? I mean, he'll do whatever he wants and so forth, so it's nothing. It's mankind. I mean, right now, my biggest difficulty is what will it be for Aaron, who's 14 months old, my grandson? All right, I'll tell you a story. Aaron was born on May 8. He was supposed to be on the 21st of May, but he was born earlier, you know, and thank God everything was fine. I was liberated on May 5th, 1945. My brother was liberated on May 8th. He was born on the day when my brother was liberated. When I went to Minneapolis and I held Aaron, it's like I held for 2 million mothers who never held. In the wildest dream did I never dream that I would survive the concentration camps, Nazi Germany, come to United States, have a family, second generation, and then be able to have a third generation. That to me is that. And yet, when I think about it, what he might have coming with nuclear power, destroy, for what? And that is to me a very frightening thing. And I keep constantly thinking about it.
Wrestling with God, America's Young Jews, is part of a series of programs on religion in America called On This Side of Paradise. It was produced by Maeve McGoran and narrated by Anthony Mateo. Project directors were Ellen Cherry and Anthony Mateo. It was produced for the Temple University Religion Department at WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Executive director was Professor Gerhard Spiegler of Temple University. Production assistant was Greg Allen. Engineers were Jay Goldman, Fred Snyder, Joyce Lieberman, and Ron Carson. The prayer for the dead was chanted by Professor Saul Wax of Gratz College. This program was made possible by grants from the Pennsylvania Humanities Council and the Samuel S. Fells Fund.
This is Fresh Air on WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. And with me in the studio are two of the people who you just heard from in the preceding documentary. Our phones are now open for your questions and comments. Our number is 923-2774. That's 923-2774. My guests are Jeffrey Daycrow and Phyllis Taylor. Jeffrey Daycrow is national co-director of the New Jewish Agenda, a liberal group which supports peace in the Middle East and opposes Israel's military policies. They're pro-feminist and pro-choice. In the program, we heard Daycrow discuss the connection between his Judaism and social political activism. He's also a member of Ahav Yirah, which is an alternative congregation. Phyllis Taylor in the program discussed why she has been observing Quaker traditions, although she still considers herself to be Jewish. Taylor is a nurse who has been active in the hospice movement for many years and has served as the chair of Amnesty International's Medical Capacity Committee and is now on Amnesty's National Board of Directors. We're interested in your reactions to the views expressed on the program we just heard, and we invite you to call with your questions and comments at area code 215-923-2774. This Side of Paradise continues next Tuesday at 4 o'clock, when the subject will be In the Name of Allah, American Muslims. Our phone number again is 923-2774, and Jeffrey Daycrow, Phyllis Taylor, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me ask you each to either give us an update on the comments that we just heard, which were recorded several months ago, or if there's anything that you'd like to add to what you have said in the program that we just heard. Jeffrey?
Well, I think one of the things that I'm real pleased about is that Agenda had a very prominent role in the August 27th, 20th anniversary march in Washington. And in light of some of the things that were talked about on the tape, I think that's real important because of the fact that there was a tremendous debate that went on in the American Jewish community earlier this summer about whether or not Jewish organizations and Jews ought to participate in that march. What we found was that in organizing a service that took place the night before, at which Martin Luther King III and Susanna Heschel, the daughter of Abraham Joshua Heschel, at which they both participated, and then the following day, that besides our own contingent of over 500 people, hundreds of others came up to us, indicated how happy they were that we were there, joined with us for periods, and over said how important it was that Jews were there visibly and publicly.
Phyllis Taylor?
I think the only thing I'd want to, again, communicate is that the position I find myself in as bridge is incredibly, incredibly painful. It has been in the past, and it continues to be today. New Jewish Agenda wasn't around for me, and because of that, I have traveled in some ways too far, I think, and so have no definite kind of home because of that straddling. I, too, was in that Sabbath service on Friday night that Jeffrey talked about and marched with the New Jewish Agenda contingent and also marched with another contingent that was made up of radical Christians as I went back and forth. And in some ways, that's pretty symbolic of where I am.
Okay, well, let's take our first phone call, and we invite you to call with any questions or comments at 923-2774. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello. What I was interested in is how Auschwitz reveals God's will in history. I think that's an important question. We've looked at Auschwitz from other perspectives, and if we don't deal with this question, then I don't see how the Jewish faith can hold validity for young people. I think it's the kind of question that perhaps was asked after the Babylonian captivity. And I wonder if you know of any book or can make any comment on this.
That for me,
Auschwitz from a religious perspective revealing God's will.
For me, what Auschwitz taught me is that God works through humans and that many humans were not open to the power of God. I think God wept during Auschwitz. And I think what God calls us to do now, day after day after day, is to make sure there are no more Auschwitz for any persons. I in no way believe that Auschwitz was part of God's plan, but only part of the distress that has come as we as people have not listened to what God revealed to ourselves through the prophets, through Abraham and Sarah, and also through Jesus.
Let's take another call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. And good afternoon to your guest. I'm calling your guest. First of all, let me compliment you on a very interesting program. I'm calling as an American black, 59-year-old grandmother. And I'm constantly hearing labels put upon blacks, at me among many, who has had nothing throughout my life up until the last 15 or 20 years, but the utmost respect for the Jewish community. I have found myself defending them in the workplace, but through the years I have found, and I'm not generalizing, because I know that there are still thinking Jewish people in the community, but I find myself seeing many American Jews who have become so Americanized that they are just as bigots, just as racist as the rest of the ethnic groups in this country. And I'm wondering if you could explain why this is, when constructive criticism may be made against some Jewish people and Israel, that we're that people are automatically labeled anti-Semitic. I happened to read Irving Howe's book, World of Our Fathers, and he himself said that black anti-Semitism has been blown out of proportion, and also, had it not been for the blacks here in this country, that this country would have dealt more with anti-Semitism, and the blacks have been the buffer here for Jews. And
let's let our guests comment on that.
I will, and thank you.
Well, I think the question that you're raising is a very important one, and it is a very problematic one, one that I think both Phyllis and I were implicitly alluding to when we talked about the march that took place this summer. I think that one of the things that we've seen in this country historically, and not just in this country, is that as any ethnic or racial group manages to acquire a certain level of economic success, that there's a process of assimilation and detachment from their earlier culture and heritage and ethical and even folk ways. I don't think the Jews are immune from that. I don't think the blacks are immune from it, and I don't think that any other groups that are hopefully going to experience greater economic success will be immune to it either. The problem, and I think that Phyllis, something that you said at the end of the tape was really correct. I think it's really important that we remember what the basis of our reality is. And the basis of our reality as Jews is the prophets. And the prophets shout to some of us, hopefully increasingly to a larger number. It's a word that's come to us in this century and in the last 25 years very strongly through the civil rights and black power movements as blacks embraced and re-embraced a heritage that they found so important to them during slavery. I think that an increasing number of Jews are looking at the question of what Israel is becoming, has become, are doing that with an increasing ability to be critical and self-critical, even with all of the love that we feel for Israel. And that one of the most important things that our real allies in the world, such as you seem to be, can do for us is to hold fast with us, remind us that you support us as human beings and that you support our right to have a nation, and remind us that you want us to be a moral nation and a moral people.
Okay, thank you very much for your phone call. Our number, if you have any questions, is 923-2774. With me are Phyllis Taylor and Jeffrey Daycrow, who were two of the participants in the documentary that we just heard on American Jews. Before we take the next question, I'd like to ask you why you think it is at this time that there are a lot of American Jews who are becoming more religious, perhaps even more religious than their parents were. After a period of time when it maybe worked the other way, where generations were perhaps getting less religious?
Well, I'll start. I know that speaking for myself as a child of a survivor who grew up in a family that was involved in a conservative Jewish synagogue, I was deeply attracted to a more intense religious practice than my parents had given me in the home. And yet it was very clear for me that emerged both out of my home and also out of the fact that I was seeking to find something that was really ineffable, inexplicable, that they couldn't give to me directly and that seemed acquirable only through some delving back into the tradition out of which we all came. I think that it's clear that most American Jews and so many others in the United States and in the Western world have discovered that the modern world is not giving us everything that it said it would, that the promise of the modern world is not a fulfilled one. And part of the reason for that is because it has sought to cut us off from the world that underpins even that.
I think for me, in my own very laboriously built faith, because I'm in my 40s, and very much my reality was the Holocaust, and it was, there is no God, if that could happen, to maybe there is a God, but if so, where? To finally coming to a faith position, saying there is a God, but God works through us.
And we must hear, as Jeffrey said, strongly the prophets, as we also, and in the Christian world, have to hear the prophets, whether it be Martin Luther King as the prophet, or Jesus as the prophet, or other people throughout history who have been prophetically yelling out what God is calling them to do. When I got to that awakening, that there was a God, I could not find a synagogue that translated that into action. And that's one of the tragedies, that the Havarot movement was not there at that time that was available to me, and that maybe is the difference in our age and experience.
I got the impression from what you said on the preceding program, Phyllis, that you were disturbed by a trend you saw that a lot of synagogues and well, I don't know about synagogues, but a lot of Jewish individuals in America were perhaps emphasizing Jewish culture as opposed to the spiritual teachings in Judaism. Do you think that that is a problem?
I think it is probably less of a problem. But one of the things for me that's happened is, how does that spiritual get translated? And because I believe that God's on the side of the poor and oppressed, where are the people in the soup kitchens? Why aren't we screaming out that people don't have heat? You know, why are we not challenging some of those inequalities? I have found, for me, those groups that most speak and stand on the side of the poor are the Christians. But now, thank God, there are the new Jewish agendas as well. But I'm already almost too far in the Christian world, but still in that problem of being both.
Let's take another phone call. Do you have any comments you want to make on what was just said, Jeffrey?
No, I think that I mostly agree with what Phyllis said.
Okay, let's take another phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Thank you. I wonder if Mr. Jeffro can help me and answer some of my questions. As a member of the Jewish faith that has seriously studied the Talmud all our lives, I am very distressed by the behavior of a large percentage of American Jews that malign anyone that criticizes Begin or Sharon's behavior, while there are 400,000 Israeli, mostly Sabras, who agree that there are behavior of Begin and Sharon is incorrect, and why so many American Jews have taken the position, a pro-nuclear position, an anti-rally that did not show up at that rally. Can you answer that? I'll hang up and listen, and thank you very much.
Thank you for your call.
Well, I think a lot of the discussion that went on in the earlier program about the concern about anti-Semitism, the threat of destruction, is not one that goes away easily. The American Jewish community is a community made up of survivors. Even those who are not themselves survivors or children of survivors, the whole Jewish people that survived beyond Auschwitz is a community of survivors. And it perceives itself in precisely that way. And to minimize that real sense of the way Jews feel about themselves so frequently, and certainly so publicly and as a communal body, is a big mistake. I think that the thing that's so important to do in response to that is to recognize the love and compassion and understanding that's necessary to summon in response to that fear, that terror. I know that as I've spent time with Phyllis over the years, that it's been difficult for me to understand the kind of path that she's traveled. And yet the things that she says make sense to me in my mind. And as I've worked with her on occasion, I've come to understand the truth and the honesty of her as a person and to respect and love that. It's very hard for us to be able to have the experience of working directly with Phyllis Taylors or any other human being. And it takes a lot of effort to go out of our way to make that contact. I think that's one of the things that we have to do. New Jewish Agenda, at its very best, is an organization that works hard at making contacts with other Jews and non-Jews throughout the world around the various issues that we work. And I think ultimately that's the only way that we can succeed.
Let's take another phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air. And Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Yes. While the program has indicated that there's a return to Jewish practices and tradition, it also underscored very strongly that many, many Jewish people have left the fold. They're now leaving the fold by way of assimilation and other means. Are there any studies that would support that contention, especially the second one, that Jewish people have left the fold by virtue of the fact that they have assimilated or that they don't join organized religion like synagogues? Are there any figures or facts to support that contention? And what are they, if there are any such figures?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are important to know. One is that, as was mentioned in the earlier program, about half of the American Jewish community is not affiliated with any organization or congregation or any other body in the Jewish community. So that's already a very significant figure. The other thing is that it's true that the intermarriage rate continues to rise. It's quite high now. I don't know the exact figure. But there are studies that get done regularly and books that get published. There's certain individuals who've made it their life's work to chronicle these kinds of trends in the in American Jewish sociology, Marshall Sklar at Brandeis and Stephen Cohn there. And the American Jewish Yearbook each year gives updates of this kind of demographic data.
Any other comments?
No, just that I wish, again, what I keep coming back to is I wish there had been a place for me where there was that merging of lifestyle and God and translating it into action.
Okay, let's take another call. Hi, this is Fresh Air and you're on the air.
I'd like to know, or let me just say first that I think the beginning of solving any real problems is to have people who don't want to identify just with a specific group, but rather be just a person in this world for peace, for brotherly love, for what the real religious ideals are. And I, because of that, I think I wonder why, people want to identify and continue to even increase that identity with a certain specific group that somehow puts down other groups or excludes other groups. And I think even in the example of the Holocaust, what happened to the Jews was certainly the most horrible, but also millions of other people got killed during that. And I think it's, if you really looked at what true religious thought and feeling is, it has very little to do with specific religions, Jewish or Catholic or Hindu or anything. And I wonder how you support yourselves being associated with a certain group rather than just with humankind.
I am who I am, and who I am is a Jewish person who also is a Quaker. I find in my work at the hospital, because I believe God is a God of all peoples, whether one translates that into Christian ritual, into Jewish ritual, into Muslim ritual, etc. Last week, I sat with a woman and prayed with her and read to her from the New Testament and didn't find an inconsistency in doing that. Mm-hmm. Because I think ultimately we all seek to know God through the roots by which we are most comfortable or grew up with. I also am concerned about divisions between people, but one of the things I found in my Christian friends is that we can travel a very similar path. I worked with a group of nuns, and I found an absolute sisterhood with them. They didn't try to convert me to Catholicism. I didn't try to convert them to Judaism. We were women concerned about justice issues, concerned about lifestyle, working together, following our God, not my God, but it was for me, and I think for them, our God, even though we use different ritual to do so.
Thank you for your phone call. Jeffrey Decker, let me ask you to maybe tell us what you think are the real issues now that face the American Jewish community, which is perhaps heading in some directions different than it was before. There are very politically active groups, which is nothing new, but there's the group like New Jewish Agenda, which is a pretty new group. There's the growth of the Havirah movement, which is small alternative congregations that are meeting. What are some of the issues that you see facing the Jewish community now?
Well, I think that the Jewish community at this time in the United States is still overwhelmingly concerned with Israel. And it seems to me that that bespeaks both great possibility and great problems. The overwhelming problem, it seems to me, is that the war in Lebanon, which occurred last year, is still having repercussions that have not yet been completely assimilated and understood. I don't think there's any question but that the relationship that exists among all Jews in the world is very much conditioned by the nature of Israel and the degree to which it is authentically perceived as a Jewish state, which it claims to be. The degree to which it retains a level of moral responsibility by which I don't mean a double standard that should be held up to the State of Israel as opposed to any other nation in the world, but the degree to which it upholds the standards that it sets for itself and is prepared to implement a foreign and domestic policy that is consistent with the standards that it establishes for itself, is the degree to which Jews throughout the world are going to have positive feelings about themselves. Once that's understood, then it's possible to develop, I think, different kinds of understandings and different kinds of forms in other places. Now, that isn't to say that Jewish life in this country isn't going on anyway. It's going on tremendously. And New Jewish Agenda, for example, has argued very consistently that the vitality of life, of Jewish life throughout the world, shouldn't necessarily depend on Jews in any other place. So we think that they're independent, but the relationship is also a critical one.
Okay, let's take another phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Hi, I'd like to ask two very different questions.
I should ask you to keep it brief because we're very close to the end of the show.
Short questions. One is to the woman who's the Quaker. I was at that October 6th demonstration, and I'd like to sort of reverse the question to her and ask her why, among all those groups of oppressed people that they mentioned, they didn't mention Soviet Jewry, and they mentioned the Middle East, but they didn't mention the conditions of the Jews who still live in Arab countries.
Okay, do you want to respond to that?
I wasn't part of the planning of the October 6th, so I really can't answer why not. I think, again, unfortunately, unless there are bridge people, though, since the vast majority of this country is Christian, they're just not going to think about that. And we need to more and more be really working and dialoguing with each other as religious people so that those who do the planning of things like that are sensitized to include in things like Soviet Jewry and other concerns.
Do you want to respond at all, Jeffrey?
Well, I want to just make one comment. I think that the feeling that the woman who just called in expressed, without saying it directly, was shared by a lot of Jews who were there. I know that Agenda sent a delegation, that we had a large contingent that was there, and that a large number of Jews who weren't marching with us and who never particularly identified with Agenda as the body that they wanted to do their disarmament work with came over to us and stood around with us throughout the whole thing. And I think that one of the reasons for that was because there was a sense of connection which was lacking and that the presence of Jews was not acknowledged in any kind of serious public way.
Okay, thank you for your phone call. We're about out of time. I'd like to ask you, because of Hitler's exterminations and other purges during history, Jews have feared for the possible eradication of the religion. Do you think that that fear is one of the reasons why some people who never thought they'd become religious as Jews are now becoming more religious?
Yes, I do. I think that I know of Jews. The woman who spoke on the tape early, Miriam Seidler, is a woman who was a secularist, has been a secularist all her life, and yet has increasingly felt a connection to a spiritual, if not a theological, sense of Judaism.
Phyllis, do you want to comment on that?
Just that I think, again, you know, that fear of being annihilated is absolutely always there, and part of what we try to do as humans is to make sense and make meaning, and religion helps us in making meaning.
Well, with that, I want to thank you both very much for joining us. And with me have been Phyllis Taylor and Jeffrey Daycrow, who were both featured in the documentary that we heard at 4 o'clock titled Wrestling with God, America's Young Jews, part of our four-part series on American religion on this side of paradise. The series continues next Tuesday at 4 o'clock when the subject will be In the Name of Allah, American Muslims. On this side of paradise concludes Tuesday, October 25th at 4 o'clock with the program Singing a New Song, The Catholic Left. After each of these documentaries, we'll be joined in the studio by two of the featured speakers and invite you, as we did today, to phone in and speak with them with your questions and comments. On the Side of Paradise was produced by Maeve McGoran with project directors Ellen Cherry and Anthony Mateo. And I want to thank everybody who called this afternoon on Fresh Air. And if you missed the introductions, Jeffrey Daycrow is the national co-director.